5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Happy Sunday, Croc Nation. This is your favorite cancer survivorship bus driver, Dr. Tommy and Ellie. On the other side of the glass in silent mode is my friend, Angel Santana. Have faith, let it begin. Our poor dear Angel Santana suffering from kidney stones and a colicky baby. Other than that, he's doing just damn fine. Angel, I don't know if you're able to talk. Are you able to talk?
Well, you know what? It's just going to be a very interesting podcast, but I will be here and so is Noah. So we're here.
Noah's going to be our tri-host. So we have a co-host and a tri-host.
Absolutely.
Angel, it's so good to see you with a little bit of rosy cheeks. The picture you sent me from the ED was not pretty. And then I listened to your podcast on Friday. It was close to pathetic as I could ever imagine. You sounded so bad. I'm glad to see you're on this side of the grass today and looking a bit better. So Angel, I'm excited because we're going to start a new module. Anytime we start a new module, it's like giving birth without having to go through the pain of giving birth. So we're going to start a new module. We're going to call it computer science for the survivor. And we're going to start the computer science with episode one, talking about patient portals. When we were finishing the modules last week on kindness, timeliness of care and gentle honesty, and we were talking about all those things. And I thought, well, you know, what a great sort of dive point to go into the computers and in medicine and how we might be able to leverage the technology for our survivors to make their survivorship more manageable or give them tools that they can use to make their survivorship more pleasant. So that's where we're going to start. And today we're going to start with a story, as we start most of our podcast episodes, with the story. We'll call her Carla. Carla is a lovely young woman, Spanish speaking, speaks very little English, and she has pretty aggressive thyroid cancer, but very manageable. She's very stable. She's doing very well. And she had reached the point in her disease process where I wanted her to see somebody in the city, New York City, for a second opinion to see if there was anything more that we could do or if we were missing anything or if there were any clinical trials that we could put her on. And of course, there's the exchange of medical records and information that takes place before that happens. And when Carla was sitting in front of the doctor, he was looking at her chart and he was astounded because on her chart, it said that she was an IV drug abuser, an alcoholic. She had cirrhosis. She had AIDS. She had hepatitis. She smoked, pretty much every, she had syphilis and herpes and every STD that there is. And there was this little Spanish lady sitting there, and what the doctor must have been thinking. And he said to her, Carla, is it true that you have HIV? Is it true that you have hepatitis? Is it true that you have? And what had happened was this poor woman, from our medical records, everything got inverted. So all of the things that were pertinent negatives turned into pertinent positives. So she was, of course, mortified and, of course, very upset, understandably so. And we fixed the problem. But when we talk about technology and we talk about computer science and we talk about just the computer itself and the internet and, you know, and Googling and all that sort of things, don't think that there's not a dark side to all this technology. And we're going to sort of get into the good and the bad and the ugly, which is the name of today's episode, as it relates to patient portals. So before we talk about the patient portal, let's make sure everyone knows what a patient portal is. So when you go to your doctor, Angel, you were just in the ED, there was an encounter, you saw some doctors, you had some blood work, probably had some x-rays, apparently or supposedly that information should be accessible to you on computer format. You would go into your portal, your patient portal, and you would be able to look at all the results of your testing. And where that comes from, now that sounds like a delightfully wonderful thing for our cancer survivors. But let's be careful about what we wish for, or at least let's try to make the process a better process so it's not a a problematic process. So it goes back to pretty much 2009, 2008, when the Center for Medicare, Medicaid, CMS wanted to incentivize physicians to start utilizing electronic medical records in their practice, to start them moving toward electronic prescriptions. And the thought process was that this would make a safer, more streamlined and efficient process. And it was called the Meaningful Use Act. And it went into law in the Health Information Technology for Economic and Clinical Health Act, which was part of the American Reinvestment and Recovery Act of 2009. So they call it the High Tech Act, was to modernize and improve the United States healthcare system by mandating effective and beneficial use of the electronic health record systems and electronic prescribing procedures. The motivation, obviously, was to make things simpler. When used effectively, there would be benefits to the patient, to the provider, to the pharmacist by the streamlined process. And the aim of the Meaningful Use Incentive Program was to try to improve the quality, efficiency, and coordination of patient care, again, by leveraging all of our technology. So if you remember, actually, Angel, you're younger than me, but I can go back to the 1980s, 1990s, when computers were nothing. And then the internet started, and, you know, we started using computers that were very weak. But as the technology got stronger, you see everyone's looking at monitors these days. Our phones have become our computers. And basically, that's what CMS wanted to do, was take this technology that was, you know, not going away. If anything, it was getting much more prevalent and much more ubiquitous, and try to put it into a system where it would help or benefit the patient. And that's kind of where we started with the patient portal. Unfortunately, despite the fact you would think if you walk around the mall or the streets of America and you see everyone on a cell phone and no one's looking up and everybody's, you know, deep into technology, only about 20 to 30% of patients actually use their portal. So that's problem number one. Problem number two is that there's still a lot of deficiencies, and we're going to talk about some of these deficiencies. But what it was trying to do, again, cause safety, you know, create a safe environment, streamline, and make the system more efficient. Basically, you would have your personal health information available, and you would have centralization of your medications, especially if you were taking Schedule II medications. But there's a boatload or a truck full of pitfalls. So you, number one, getting results without any supervision, not a good thing, really scary, especially as it relates to the cancer survivor. There's the HIPAA laws. You want to keep your identity, you know, very, very discreet, right? You don't want everybody in the world, your neighbors or whatever, to know what's going on with you, right? You have the right to tell them, but you don't want someone telling them that you don't give permission. There's also the problem with the electronic medical record, with what I call the temptation of the cut and paste. And again, that's what happened with Carla, was the secretary cut and pasted her medical records and everything sort of, whatever the program was, everything inverted. And you always have the problem. And the other thing is the actual validity or usefulness of a medical record. When all you're doing is cutting and pasting, sometimes you have to read three pages of things that happened 3 years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, before you actually get to the pertinent information of where you want to be and what you want to see. And this information is just regurgitated and revamped, again and again and again, and it's just building on itself. It's like a mountain of paper without paper. And you're scrolling through this record and you're really not seeing anything useful. And you could tell that the doctor spent about 3 seconds on the record, because all he did was basically take the old record and just write an extra sentence. And the reason why they do that is to make sure that CMS sees all the levels of documentation that you're supposed to see to get reimbursed. But really, the amount of time is really not accurate. And it makes it into a big, big spool of mess. It's just an absolute mess. And the other thing you have to make sure of is that you're getting the correct information. So what we can get, what our goal is to have patients have access to their prescriptions, right? Electronic prescribing. You want to have them have access to the results of their testing, and you want them eventually to be able to see our notes, right? Because the records that we have in our charts are really the patient's records. We are just the key holders. We just are basically protecting their medical information, but that medical information belongs to them. It doesn't belong to us. So the thing that's scary about the electronic portal, the patient portal, is that, again, only about 30% of the patients use the portal. And only about one third of the patients, when they are getting results, are actually getting support from their practitioner to be able to explain exactly what's going on. And I actually brought two pieces of information, one of which is my recent yearly history and physical and my lab tests. And the second thing I brought was a patient gave me permission, without using their name, to go over their PET scan results. And both of these bits of information are available in the portal. And I'm looking at this information, and I'm a doctor, and I don't even understand half of this stuff, right? So I'm looking at my blood work, and there's sodium, potassium, chloride. Who is going to know what CO2 is? Like, nobody. People know glucose. People don't know what a BUN is or a creatinine. They know what a calcium is, but they don't know what an AST, ALT, or ALP is. Those are liver functions. And what they mean, they wouldn't know. Total bilialbumin protein, EGFR. Who would know what an EGFR is? Then you look at your lipid profile. You have cholesterol, triglycerides, HDLs, LDLs. I mean, people, want to know what their cholesterol is, but I'm not sure if they really understand it in the context of the entire profile. They might want to know what their PSA is. They might want to know what their blood counts are. And when you look at the CBC, the complete blood count, you have a white blood count. Then you have neutrophils, lymphocytes, monocytes, eosinophils, basophils. Then you have all sorts of things like hemoglobin, hematocrit, MCV, MCH, MCHC, PLTs, MPVs. I mean, when you get these results, and if you don't have your physician or one of your caregivers holding your hand through this process, this can be very scary, because inevitably people are going to see something that's tagged or something that is basically flagged. Like in my case, I have a CO2 of 31 and the normal is 22 to 30. Does that mean I'm dying? What is a CO2 anyway? And why is my CO2 30? Why is it one value greater than what it should be? Now, it gets even worse when you're dealing with the PET scans or the X-ray reports, because they're very complex. And then we're going to also talk about the phenomenon of the CYA, which makes electronic portal results even more difficult to try to traverse. So when you're looking at this, you can imagine there is stable partial opacification of the left maxillary sinus. What does that mean? Is that bad? Does that mean the person's eye is going to explode? No evidence of abnormal metabolic region within the oral cavity. Is that a good thing or is that a bad thing? There is no evidence of abnormal radiotracer in the paranasal sinuses. That sounds pretty positive, right? That sounds pretty good. Nothing in the cervical lymph nodes. There is a 4.7 by 4 mm millimeter. Does anybody really know how big a millimeter is? It's like nothing, but a patient wouldn't know that. In the right upper lobe, spiculated pulmonary nodule, series 4 image 82 with an SUV max of 4.04, relatively stable sizes compared to prior. I would think I'm dying. I would think that my lung is full of cancer if I read that. There is an 18.3 by 8.7 millimeter right upper lobe anteromedial motor opacity, series 4 image 97 with an SUV max of 4.67, significant interval decreased size and metabolic activity compared to prior. The way it reads, you would think, again, you still have cancer, but it's actually a positive thing. It means that the cancer has responded to the therapy. So you're looking at all of this stuff in the stomach. There's a diffuse low-grade metabolic activity within the stomach, secondary to the react to a reactive process. Do they have stomach cancer as well? Do I also have stomach cancer? Actually, no. That reaction doesn't mean any of that. It's all good. So you can tell just by this brief, diversion into the records of my blood work and our wonderful patient's PET scan that they let me share. If you're going into that portal and you don't have any doctor that's going to help you interpret these results, you're going to get really freaked out. And I do want to talk about the phenomenon of the CYA. And I also want to talk about the void. And I especially want to talk about the reality of what's going on here with the electronic medical record with the patient portal. So let's talk about the phenomenon of CYA. So CYA means cover your ass. So in my time, in my career, my 30-year career, I practiced in a different environment than the doctors that practiced before me. So 30 years before me and some of the doctors that were getting toward the end of their careers when I was beginning my careers, we were already in an environment of a highly litigious and adversarial climate. So physician lawsuits were going crazy. And if any young doctor or older doctor or seasoned doctor or any doctor or nurse have ever been sued, I can tell you it's probably the worst thing that can ever happen. Even if you didn't do anything wrong or if you're just a name on the chart and you happen to be named, the entire malpractice process is completely broken, and it's humiliating. It is absolutely soul-sucking. It is probably the worst thing that could ever happen to you. It can destroy your mind. And as a result, we doctors have responded by practicing extraordinarily defensively. So here's a PET scan, which is a great PET scan, but the doctor who read it so defensively that if you were to read it, there are so many things that are out there and unanswered, it would drive anybody crazy. So that's kind of the way and the environment we're in. And when we look at these blood tests and we look at these results, and you have doctors that are going to be practicing defensively or with the CYA principle, it also adds to the consternation and the fear of having access to these records. To make things even worse, the amount of times that patients are actually walk through this data with their doctors is less than one third, less than 33% of the time when this information becomes available to patients, they're not getting a call from their doctor for at least a week, if not longer, and they have to deal with that. Now, we have spoken about the cancer survivorship roller coaster on many occasions, and here it is again, operative on a level of how scary being a survivor is, how survivors always have to live with the possibility of the potential that their cancer is going to come back. And this alien within them, it's always so scary. And for a day or two, you forget about it, and then you remember it, and then you wait a couple of months go by, and you kind of forget about it. And then your doctor says, okay, you need to do some blood work and some x-rays before you come back. Then you go to DEFCON 5, and everything basically, you're all freaked out, already you're on that roller coaster, and now you get those results, you run to your portal because you want to know what the results show, and you have no one to interpret it. So half of the patients who read these things, they get freaked out and for no reason, and there's no one there to help them. So we talked about the roller coaster. We talked about the concept of covering your ass. And we talk, now we're going to talk about a thing called the void. So the void, or my so-called void, what I call it, and I could even see it in my own practice, is that in the practice of medicine, especially oncologic medicine in this day and age, it's a highly technical field. As a result, we tend to over-test. We have access to all of this technology, all of these wonderful imaging modalities, all of these wonderful blood tests and Foundation One and genetic testing and mutations and, you know, and, you know, looking at all these different sort of chromosomal abnormalities and things and how to, you know, personalize or individualize the care for each patient. And then you notice or you realize that you're ordering all these tests and you have all of these patients and you have all of your daily responsibilities of taking care of the people in front of you, that there's really a broken system as far as how to circle back to get the results back to the patients that you saw the week before in a timely manner so you can talk them off of the ledge before they freak out and see this information, before you're willing to share it with them, or before you're able to actually carve out 10 minutes to go over the results with them. So we have a broken system, a cover your ass attitude, and just too much information, too little time to really adequately help our patients traverse this patient portal. So Angel, what do we always tell our patients? We always tell our heroes, our survivors, that there's no honor to a podcast that continues to repetitively tell everyone how broken the system is without giving any solutions. So we are going to go through some solutions. And I think the number one solution, and everyone has heard me, you know, get on my soapbox about this, but if you're an oncologist or practicing in the field of oncology, your availability has to be 24/7. You have to give patients your cell phone number. You have to be available to them. You don't have to talk to them the minute they call you. They can leave a message on your cell phone or leave a message with your office, but you have to get back to them. If someone, and this happens to me on a daily basis, how patients get these results, they misinterpret the results, they freak out with the results. And, you know, and I've had a problem convincing people to not, you know, to call me, as opposed to the other way around, not to call me, because a lot of people will say, I didn't want to bother you. It's the weekend. It's this or that. They have to realize that we do not want the sun to go down. We don't want the sun to set with anyone who's, you know, in crisis, who's afraid. You know, it's our job to let them sleep at night and let them know what's going on. So availability is the number one solution to this problem with the patient portal. And the number two solution, and I am guilty of this as much as anybody, is we have to create our own systems and actually make sure we keep it in our minds, not in the back of our minds, but the front of our minds, the priority of getting results back to our patients. If we are going to do this testing, if we're going to go through the trouble of ordering this stuff, and if we're going to make our patients go through sometimes the discomfort and downright pain of doing these things like x-rays and intravenouses and CAT scans and PET scans and MRI. Oh, how about the MRI where you're going basically into a coffin? How about going through an MRI? You have headaches. You think you have brain metastasis. You go through the horrible experience of going into a coffin for 45 minutes, hearing that loud banging noise from the magnet, and then not hearing from your doctor for 2 weeks, and then going to the portal and thinking you basically have a head full of you know, gophers when you really have nothing and everything is good. So, you know, we're putting these people through discomfort. We're bothering to order this stuff. You know, we need to realize that that's important. It's important for us to get back to them and get them this information. And the other thing is that you have to realize that even though you're now, distracted by the work in front of you, you can't let the work behind you fall through the cracks, because then terrible things will happen. And that's when really horrible outcomes occur. The other thing is that getting patients their results could also mitigate a catastrophic event. So patients can go to their portals, either for themselves or for a loved one, and catch something that we may not even catch. How many elderly people are being watched by their children or whatever. And I had read many stories of children catching a potential urine infection that, if it's caught in time, will keep the patient out of the hospital for 2 weeks with urosepsis. So, you know, the portal is generally a good thing as long as we demonstrate a commitment to get the results back or to support our patients during the process of them getting this information. So it really is important. So again, getting back to solutions, I have three examples of another way we can sort of prioritize these results or being available for our patients. One is I'll call low impact, one I'll call medium impact, and one I'll call high impact. So say a low impact is a person that I see with thyroid cancer, low-risk thyroid cancer, a young person, did great, did the surgery, did their iodine. They're going to live however long they're going to live. They're not going to die of their thyroid cancer. Whatever happens to them, whatever God's plan is for them will be God's plan, and they are not going to die from their thyroid cancer. They end up having some thyroid testing that I do every year, and then basically I'll set up what's called a televisit, which we'll get into in another podcast. Or put it in a care path in the computer to alert me to call them with the results of the testing. If they happen to freak out, even if they're a low impact case, they might see themselves as a high impact case, which is completely fair and reasonable, because everybody gets to judge their own journey, right? Who am I to tell them that they're low impact? But I feel confident enough where I feel I'm not going to miss anything terrible. And they can call me on my cell phone if they get freaked out, or I'll call them according to what my callback schedule is to give them the results. In the medium impact, so it's a person with a breast cancer, early prostate cancer that has been out for a few years, and we're just checking either their mammogram or their ultrasound, or we're checking their PSA levels. Again, setting up either a televisit or setting them up to come into the clinic to discuss, or giving them a call or sending them a quick note. Any of those would be appropriate. And again, the availability, if the patient wants the results sooner than the 2 weeks that you have to call them back, or if they look at the portal and they freak out, then they have access to you. What I think is really brilliant and important is in the high impact cases. So patients with lung cancer, the head and neck cancer that you've treated, really, you know, stage four cases, brain cancers, and you're getting imaging, you're getting an MRI to see how the radiation chemo did for your brain cancer. You're getting PET scans for your lung cancer. You're 6 months out. How did I do? You're getting your first PSA after the completion of your prostate therapy. You're going to want to be followed very closely, and you're going to want to follow these patients very closely. So what I tell patients is not even worrying about the portal. I'll have them come in face to face, not just to go over the results, but I think it's really important to have the patients see their studies, to look at their blood work, to see their x-rays, to go over their x-rays, not only to go over their x-rays that they just had, but compare them to their x-rays that they had before treatment began. That's the beauty of oncology, is because you can do a before and after, right? The Greatest Loser, right? There was a TV show. You'd see somebody, you know, like a balloon, and then a couple of weeks later, they're eating, you know, cottage cheese and, you know, doing CrossFit, and then all of a sudden they look like Adonis. You look at the before and the after. We can kind of do the same thing. I do it daily. I show patients what their lung cancers look like before the treatment and after, their head and neck cancers. And it's amazing and wonderful. It's such a great experience to be able to do that, to show them that. But you have to get them in quickly because you don't want them to go to the portal to see, because even a good result, as we've seen, may be considered a bad result. So, Angel, I'm thinking this is going to be a wonderful, wonderful module. We're going to have a lot of information about computer science, about technology. We'll talk more about the patient portal. We'll talk about the HIPAA laws and how with the computerized system of medical records and medical information, how we could keep their confidentiality. We're going to talk to them about Googling some things they don't understand, which could be a disaster as much as getting, you know, undigestible information without assistance. We're going to get Rod on as one of our guest hosts one week, talking about how we can come up with a plan of how they can computerize and actually put into an electronic your own electronic file in a way that you could understand it or you can access it, you know, better than the patient portals. The patient portals are great, but they're very primitive right now, and they make no sense. It's almost like a Jackson Pollock painting. It's just like results everywhere. There's no real sort of it's like a jigsaw puzzle. We have to, you know, we're going to use Rod and use his expertise to help us to put together a system that perhaps patients could then, utilize for themselves. We're also going to be talking about telemedicine. You know, coronavirus, as I say all the time, did a lot of horrible things to a lot of great people, and we lost a lot of wonderful people. I even hear Angel on your podcast praying for families that have lost their loved ones to COVID. But one of the great things that came out of COVID was telemedicine, and that's here to stay. So we're going to do an episode on telemedicine. And we're also going to teach our brave survivors about Zoom and Google and how they can use that effectively, how to use YouTube, how to do research, how they can go listen to, look at lectures about their issues and about, you know, their journeys and things like that. We're going to do that as well. So we're going to have a really, I think, productive module. I think it's going to be a very useful module. And I think the ideal situation, what we're trying to do here on the Croc Podcast, is we're trying to create an environment where you become your own advocate, where you don't have to be, you know, it's great. You do need to have your doctors and your nurses and your caregivers help you through the process. But we want to empower you with this information, get your toolbox really sharpened, get those tools really, really good. So you could be your own advocate. You're almost going to be like your own primary care practitioner. Hopefully Rod will help us be able to decipher how to put this information into, aliquots that make sense, into files, electronic files, how to use Google, how to use YouTube, how to use the portal, and how to get in touch with your caregiver as it relates to the portals. Angel, how are you doing there with the status of your kidney stones, your crying babies, and all of your other responsibilities?
As you can hear, we're still in the crying zone, but I will say this, while the baby's crying, I will be remiss to tell everybody, see, look, he's getting quiet because he knows, we have a brand new updated Croc podcast and Croc VIP website. It's been relaunched, and we encourage everybody to take a look at it, www.crocvip.com.
Awesome. Well, we do have a tri-host this week with little small Noah Santana, throwing in his two cents. So I think what happened, Angel, is Noah looked at his patient portal and he freaked out. I think he was looking at some abnormal results and his pediatrician hasn't gotten back to him yet.
Well, most likely.
So on behalf of Noah Santana, Angel Santana, we want to thank a bunch of people. We want to thank our wonderful board of directors. Can't wait to have dinner with them next week. Like to thank, of course, poor Angel Santana, the greatest co-host of all time, spitting out kidney stones, taking care of crying babies. He's like Superman, taking care of the switchboard at the hospital. Angel Santana, have faith, let it begin. Thank you, my dear friend. Rod Freeman, Thank you for getting the new website up and running. Still tweaking it, I know, but it looks amazing. Can't wait to till our survivors take advantage of that. Speaking of which, right, that should be another episode for this module on technology utilizing the websites. In regard to our dear friends, Michael Benzea, Charlotte Larson, thank you for your support. And we end this podcast as we end every single podcast. On behalf of Angel, myself, little Noah Santana, the board of directors, we really think you guys are special. We really think you guys are heroes. We really are grateful and so blessed to be here as a resource for you. We care about you. You're important. You are courageous warriors. We wish you a long, healthy, happy, and cancer-free life. God bless you. God be with you. God keep you. Peace.